is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint, the Midweek Report.
I want to take a step back today, and I want to be able to take a look at what's in the mind of a terrorist. Why do these people do the things that they do? How can we arm ourselves? How can we be ready for what might happen next in this new world order? And I want you to welcome onto the show here, Dr. James Mitchell is here. And Dr. Mitchell, as you may know, was involved in the development of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program. And he actually interrogated 14 of the most senior so-called high-value detainees in United States custody. His book, Enhanced Interrogation, is well-known and a must-read when it comes to interrogation. So he certainly has been there on the front lines in this approach of interrogation. And I think, you know, Dr. Mitchell, when I think of in the mind of a terrorist, I want to ask you just right off the top, who are these people? Let's get a profile of who these people are. Who are they?
Well, if you're talking about Islamic terrorists, you're talking about folks who, if they're willing to use terror as a tool to shape public opinion or to achieve some kind of an objective or as an instrument of war, you're talking about folks who usually subscribe to the literal interpretation of the Quran, who usually believe that the Quran is the actual word of God, Allah, passed down unerringly from when it was dictated to Muhammad down to modern civilization. And rather than being radical, these are the folks who are the most fundamental. They run closest to the way that Muhammad and the others thought about the Quran. So if those are the folks that you're talking about, then that's what you're up against.
So you say something very interesting there. So you're saying they're not radical, they're fundamental. That's interesting.
Well, we tend to think that one of the myths, I think, that they've been very good at perpetrating is this idea that radical, so-called radical Islam, extremist Islam, mm-hmm. is a perversion of true Islam, and that somehow violence has been injected into it because of, I don't know, the United States' Middle Eastern policy or, mm-hmm. you know, the way the Muslims are being treated in the world or whatever, when in fact that's not true. Islam, as it was originally conceived, was not and never has been a religion of peace the way that Americans think of the word peace. And the closer you get to the actual dictates of the militaristic use of Islam to capture and conquer the world, mm-hmm. the closer you get to the fundamental teachings of the original Islamic doctrine.
Okay, so when somebody says shades of Islam, what are the shades of Islam? You would say there are no shades of Islam, no?
What I would say is what Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would say. What mm-hmm. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would say, who's the mastermind behind 9/11, he would say, you may call yourself a true Muslim, but if you don't believe the way that I believe, then you aren't a true Muslim and you're not worshiping true Islam.
Okay.
So I think we need to look at it from their perspective, not our perspective. We tend to think of it in terms of the possibility that there can be large pockets of moderate Muslims who are still practicing Islam. But those people who are fundamentalists, those people who are religious jihadists, Islamists, those folks don't view those people as true Muslims. They view them as apostates who are practicing at best a bastardized version of their religion.
Exactly. The apostates and the others who... So that's where it gets a little murky, I think, Dr. Mitch. That's interesting because that gets a little murky then now because, you know, you've got those that are not practicing per se and they would call them apostates. So those people are probably at greater risk as well to be harmed or, you know, to be targets of people who really are the followers, are they not?
Well, yes. Virtually everyone who isn't a follower of Salafist Islam or the most fundamentalist version of Shiite Islam are potential targets. If you go back to Islamic law, If you are a Muslim who has strayed from the true path, the righteous have to offer you an opportunity to come back to the true path. And then if you refuse to do that, well, the laws are different, slightly different in different interpretations of it, but mostly it involves having you killed immediately after that.
Exactly. So, well, I know people that are, as you say, apostates that are in fear of their life.
Yes.
And these people, for whatever reason, because they might have changed their religion, or they might have protected family members, or they might have, in some capacity, they didn't follow what you call the fundamentals, and then they become a target very clearly, and they have to seek refuge somewhere, or they are in fear of their life. I mean, and there's a lot of that out there, actually. So a lot of people living here in the States that would fall into that category, you know, very clearly. All right, so within all of this now, I guess what I am wondering now, with the end goal, these people, the fundamentalists that you're saying, so it's kind of funny because I'm trying to balance in my mind, Dr. Mitchell, fundamentalists on one side and radical, they're kind of one and the same thing, I guess.
Well, the Salafists. Well, it's been described as a series of concentric circles, right? You have those people who are fundamentalists but don't want to be involved in violent jihad themselves. In fact, when I was talking with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the other detainees who were in senior al-Qaeda detainees who were in American custody, they talked about the various forms of jihad. You know, there's jihad by the sword, jihad by the hand, jihad by the tongue, and then jihad by the heart. And while folks like KSM said it's a fundamentalist duty, it's a religious duty of every true Muslim to fight American spread of American culture and to punish us for not adhering to Allah's will, there are other ways of doing that. And so if you can't fight, for example, you can do jihad of the hand, which is what we see in a lot of cases where in the voting booth they're voting in sort of anti-hate laws that are really primarily aimed at stopping the criticism of Islam, like you're seeing in the European court now. And or they're using the ACLU and other groups to sue people who are doing things that would inhibit the spread of Islamic ideology, or in the voting booth, for example, by electing people who are at least willing to appease, if not actively support, the spread of Sharia in the United States and in other Western democracies. And then there's a jihad of the tongue, where you pretend that you support Western values. You can say, well, you know, we should live in peace with our Muslim brothers. Our Muslim brothers should be living in peace with Americans. We all want the same things. Well, if you don't realize that they don't use the word peace the way that we do, then it's entirely possible that you could be deceived by that. I asked KSM about the way they use the word peace, and he said, well, peace will exist on the earth when everyone has either been converted to his version of Islam as a Salafist or been subjugated, enslaved, or slaughtered. And so he views violent terror attacks as a means of spreading peace. He said, you're fools if you think that we mean peace the same way that you mean peace. And that's the sort of way that they can use deception and jihad of the tongue. They can talk about adhering to the Bill of Rights and to our freedoms, while at the same time using those civil liberties as weapons against us in order to promote the spread of Sharia and to block the spread of anything that makes it less likely that Sharia could be spread easily. And then there's jihad of the heart, where the person is in a position where they really can't say what they think for fear of retaliation, and then you just need to keep the faith with your jihadi brothers without actually acting out, but being receptive to when you do get the chance to help them along.
Very interesting, that analysis there. Now, I think right away of a lot of television political speakers and folks that are on there regularly who talk about this. And I see experts in the field talk about peace in the way that you just say peace. And some of them will look at you straight in the face with straight eyes and talk about peace in the way that they believe it's peace. not knowing that they're talking about one version of peace, we're thinking about another version of peace, and they do not connect or meet in the middle by any degree. That is interesting, because that happens a lot, I think.
Well, the other word that we see tossed around a lot is the killing of innocents. So no one who is innocent should be killed in these terror attacks. Mm-hmm. Well, we use the word innocent differently than the Salafists do.
Okay.
You know, it is very, very difficult to be innocent in a Salafist mind. And in fact, it's permissible to kill women and children and babies because one of the things that keeps the infidel fighting for his way of life is the notion that he wants his children to live under freedom. If you destroy the children, then you not only prevent the restocking of the infidel's ranks, you also take away his reason for resisting and possibly demoralize him to the point that he will just quit the fight.
Yeah. All right. Within all of the Muslim population and the fundamentalists who are on this march for their version of peace, versus the others who really want to live in what we would call our peace, do we have any idea, or do you have any thought as to what percentage of people, I'm wondering how many within the Muslim quasi-faith, obviously they're not reading the Quran, they're not following through with those principles, they're not part of that. Do we have any idea what percentage that is? We don't know that, do we?
Well, actually, there's been several Pew research studies done on this. I don't have the actual statistics right on my tongue, but I think I recall, okay, and I'm pretty close to it, that about 25 to 26% of the folks would support the notion of violent jihad as a way to protect their religion. And so if you're talking about billions of Muslims, you're talking about a fairly large number of people.
But you're saying there's still three-quarters of them, potentially, that don't fall into that category. Is that correct?
That's true, but even if you're talking about 10%, 15%, 20%,
right,
whatever it actually happens to be,
right,
you're still talking about hundreds of thousands, millions.
Totally.
And when it comes to pulling off a terror attack, you see that just one or two of those people can do that.
Oh, yeah. No, my point isn't to shed light on that. It's to shed light on the other people. I'm totally with you there. I mean, one is too many, let alone, like you say, the hundreds of thousands or millions that are in that mode of what you're speaking about. But the balance of the people, so they're a threat to the fundamentalists, then, are they not? And I guess their goal is to pull those people into their pack, are they not?
Here's the problem that we have. This battle that we have against Salafist or Islamism, let me just call it Islamism, because there's a Shia form of this as well, is really a war of ideas. And what we've done is we've allowed them to define what is fair. You know, they've defined fair being as, if we attack their ideas, then we are Islamophobic, or we're racist, or we're promoting hate speech.
Exactly.
While the attacking of our ideas, of our culture, of our religion, is viewed as being tolerant of other cultures and religions and expected, given our so-called dominance in this area. And we're going to lose this battle of ideas if we allow that kind of political correctness to prevent us from actually showing how shabby that collection of ideas are that lead to violence.
Yeah, I get it. That is very well said. Sounds to me like there should be a movement of a cause to shed some light on this, and you should be at the head of that movement of teaching people what's really going on here, or they should at least read your books and follow, because, you know, I'm getting more out of this than I have in any conversation we've had on this before. Because as you get into the mind of this, in the mind of a terrorist, you really begin to understand what we're up against. And until we understand the core of this argument, we don't really know what we're up against. And the problem is, in the media world, it's all smoke and mirrors. You just can't follow this conversation because of a lot of things you've said already. I mean, the translation of many of these words and how they're put out to people and what they're saying, and many of the leaders in the movement that say things. All right, so let's talk about the kind of progress we're making, do you think, on this war on terror. Now, things have been, sort of okay on the surface, a bit quiet actually, since the caliphate has been disrupted, I guess, a little bit. The president has come out a couple times now in recent times here and has said that we are destroying X, being ISIS he refers to, could be any group, could be Al-Qaeda, and that they are on the run. What is your thoughts on this, really? Because I look at this as a bad camp of red angry ants, and you can disturb the red ants and move them around, but they will disperse and they will regroup somewhere else and typically come back. The red ants will. That's what comes to my mind with these guys. But how do you relate to that?
Well, again, I think of it as primarily as a battle of ideas. We're winning the game of whack-a-mole on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. We're whacking them here and we're whacking them there, and they're kind of scattering and they're going to ground. The problem is that we're losing the war when it comes to the ratcheting up of the not only of the acceptance of Sharia, but for the necessity of accepting Sharia in our culture, right? So we are losing that battle as more and more of our fundamental rights get imposed upon by people who say, well, not only do you have to allow your neighbor to practice, female genital mutilization, we have to somehow embrace that as a cultural thing that's, you know, sacrosanct to them, and we should leave that alone. So I think in some ways we're losing the jihad of the hand while we're winning the jihad of the sword, if you see my point. And I think if the jihadists were smart, and this is something that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed said to me, he said, we don't need to win by defeating you militarily. We only need to continue long enough for you to lose by quitting. And that, I think, is what the more insidious spread of Islamic ideology, especially Sharia, is happening in the United States. And you see it especially in Britain and Germany and Belgium and other places where you have these little enclaves of the traditional Scandinavian culture, mm-hmm. completely surrounded by hostile areas where people burn cars and you can't get in there without a military escort.
Right. What does quitting look like?
Quitting looks like accepting their definition of hate speech. Quitting is when the European court decides that any criticism of Islam amounts to hate speech, and therefore freedom of speech should be replaced by fear of speaking out against Muhammad or one of his really bad ideas.
Interesting. Yeah.
And we see that here. We see the spread and the continued existence of radical mosques, and I'm calling them radical, but really they're fundamental Salafist mosques, where people are allowed, or were allowed, especially under the Obama administration, to use those mosques as places to gather and spread violent ideology, because we were not going to monitor them the same way we would have monitored a Christian sect who had set up a meeting place and were planning on doing violent things against the government or against a Jewish neighborhood or a Muslim neighborhood. We would have people in there monitoring those, and we would be doing that proudly. Now what's happened is that people have dialed that back to the point where good intel is very difficult to come by, in spite of the heroic efforts of the FBI and other law enforcement agencies around our country. That's what quitting looks like. Quitting looks like turning the other, and looking the other way when you have these groups of migrant males who are predominantly Muslims who are profiling young women and leading them into sex slavery. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. Okay. Law enforcement and the authorities looking the other way and allowing this stuff to become established and ratcheting up. Okay. It also looks like us self-imposing blasphemy laws and curtailing our own freedom of speech. When you get comedians who are afraid to make fun, have no problem making fun of Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or Jainism or Mormons or whatever, but they would never make fun of Muhammad or make fun of Salafist religion, that is a self-imposed blasphemy law which amounts to quitting.
Wow. So based on that measurement right there, we are quitting right now.
Well, we're at one of those places where we have to make hard decisions, you know, and part of it has to do with protecting our own Bill of Rights. You know, we have freedom of speech, and we should not be listening to 14, 15, 16-year-old kids who want to define what freedom of speech is, because they can't even, frankly, they don't even have developed adult brains. They shouldn't be in the business of making those decisions. It should be done by older folks who have had some experience in the world, and who are focused on protecting our basic freedoms.
Yeah. You mentioned the mosque. I want to touch on that a moment here within the mosque. You know, where are we at right now? I mean, I get the sense of what you've already said within the mosque of what we have to do and what we're not doing as far as monitoring them. And really, you know, where are we at right now? Since the new administration is in place, has anything changed in that regard, Dr. Mitchell? Are we anywhere else, you know, so that we can all understand these mosques? What else can we be doing with the mosque? Because to me, I have to tell you, what comes to my mind again within all of these mosques around the country here, these are like, to me, a Trojan horse. I mean, this is a clear, flagrant, you know, Trojan horse approach where they're right here around the homeland and they're kind of set up as looking as one thing, but they're another thing. Talk to me on those mosques a moment, please.
Well, clearly, of course, all mosques are like that. You know, there are those mosques who you and I would say belong to nonviolent Muslims, and I don't think we should be talking about those. But there are mosques that authorities undoubtedly know about, who multiple folks who have done attacks have come from, and those mosques are to be monitored closely, and if they can't bring themselves under control, I think they should be shut down and whoever is spreading that ideology deported. I don't think that you have, you know, if you're an immigrant to the United States, you agree to protect and defend our Constitution. If you come to the United States and you choose not to do that, then I think you've broken your contract with us and you should be, sent on back to wherever you came from.
So it's not all mosques, but it's some mosques. And you're saying you believe that we know which mosque they are and we're not probably doing the job that we need to be doing here.
Well, I think I heard after Trump's election that some of the restraints on monitoring were being dialed back. Now, it remains to be seen whether that's the case or not. And if they truly did have informants in those positions, nobody would want to say that that was true. Right?
Okay.
But what you clearly need to know is, if you're a law enforcement agency or one of the FBI or one of the intelligence agencies that actually can legally operate in the United States, is who the people are that's spreading this poison, whether or not they're citizens, and who they're talking to. And I think it's very, very difficult. You know, and you asked me about what does it look like when we quit? When we allow them to establish safe spaces where they are comfortable talking about destroying our way of life, and we deliberately look the other way, that is quitting.
That's it. It's the Trojan horse approach, and it's the PC culture, I mean, that has created this. I mean, totally. And I get it. I mean, I report it on it every day. I totally see what you mean. And again, it's people who have sometimes nefarious agendas, and sometimes it's plain out ignorance as well, Dr. Mitchell. Ignorance plays a big part of this as well. Because I don't think a lot of people, and a lot of professional people out there that are even educated on these topics, I don't think they have a clue as to what you just talked about. You see? Because if they did, they wouldn't be doing the things that they're doing, clearly. Talk to me a moment about soft targets, a moment, please, because this seems to be a real vulnerability of ours moving forward. Any thoughts on soft targets?
Very difficult to eliminate them, obviously. And as there's more press about them, and especially as the media attacks the victims instead of the people who perpetrate those attacks, you're going to see more of them. You know, I once talked to One of the folks who, one of the senior Al-Qaeda leaders who was a battle commander, and he was an expert at luring U.S. troops into ambushes. And he would lure them into ambushes. He would kill as many as he could, and then he would run away before we could respond. And I asked him about that. I asked him, and what he said was, killing one American soldier is like killing 50. We don't have to defeat you. Because of the way that the press reacts and because of the way that the American public reacts to the death of American soldiers, you guys will quit and you will pull out. And they have that same ideology as it applies to children in kindergartens or churches or whatever, you know, dances, young people, shopping malls. These are all targets that have been identified by ISIS and have been identified by Al-Qaeda and have been justified in fatwa attacks. That we don't see more of them is actually a surprise to me.
Okay, so if we were to stay on the current trajectory that we're on and not change anything from this moment forward, and with all your knowledge and expertise of this and having been on the front lines of this interrogation and understanding the minds of these people, if you were to look ahead, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, where are we at in the war on terror at that moment, Dr. Mitchell?
Well, I think the problem that we're likely to have is that our Bill of Rights and our Constitution won't look like what it looks like now, and certainly won't look like what our founding fathers and mothers intended for it to look like. Mostly because it's going to be chipped away by political correctness, and it's going to be chipped away by case law that groups who are supporting the spread of Sharia are actively engaged in. When that happens, what you're going to get is you're going to get these enclaves of radical Islamist ideology that can be used as safe havens for launching attacks out into what remains of the United States the way it is. So I think one of the things that we have to be cautious about is not allowing our basic Bill of Rights and our constitutional laws, and especially our case law, to be put in a position where they get a do-over just because they come out of some area, do an attack, and then they run back into that area, and we have to find the specific individual rather than the group. Because the key difference between why Bush was successful in his attack was that he didn't treat it like a law enforcement matter. He went after the group of Al-Qaeda rather than trying to to specifically identify bin Ashiba and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and one or two other people. He didn't do that. If we follow our general law enforcement approach to doing this, then what's going to happen is groups will be able to attack us. And because we can't figure out what specific individual placed the bomb, then those groups are going to continue to be able to operate, because that person will be sneaked out of the country in one of these enclaves where everybody protects them. So I think 20 to 30 years from now, what we have to be cautious about is not so much the physical attacks, although that's going to be an issue. It's going to be the attack on our constitutional rights and individual freedoms. Remember, what it is that Islamists want to destroy is our way of life. They view our civil liberties and our freedoms as unclean things that are a direct attack on Islamic ideology, even if we do not directly attack them. So it is our way of life that they find reprehensible and that they want to destroy. And we have to take whatever steps we need to take to protect our constitutional rights. And that includes the freedom of speech, the freedom to assembly, the freedom to carry a weapon.
That is very well said, Dr. James Mitchell. You know, if you didn't know much about this topic before this talk, you certainly know a lot about it now, people, I'll tell you. You know, it should give you pause. The purpose of this conversation today, to me, is a call to action. the way that he has framed up the hit to our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our way of life, the political correctness, and again, the just a plain, simple English interpretation of the word peace, I think should be an eye-opener for all people, and certainly all Americans, to pay attention to, as well as a lot of the other warning signs, friends. So again, in the mind of a terrorist, I think is something we all need to be cautious of, and I think you've got to take a look out 20, 30 years from now and see where are we exactly. Have we done the job we need to be doing?
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let me bring on here now our weekly columnist on America Out Loud and a friend of our platform, IQ Al Razzulli. He's the author of Lifting the Veil. IQ was born in Iraq, by the way. He's an Arabic speaker, and he's got, again, on our bookstore, you'll find his trilogy or in Amazon, the three volumes, Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. And you can follow IQ every Monday. His column is on the front page of America Out Loud, and he's got the most fascinating reads. If you want to bone up on some information about Muhammad and Islam and Muslimhood and what's going on, here's the man that you want to read up on and communicate with. So, Jamal Khashoggi, there are a lot of rumors. Rumors are flying high right now about him and his connections. Now, tell me what you know about him, because he had some pretty out there connections. His connections and support for the Muslim Brotherhood, his connections and support to the terrorists, the Palestinian terrorist groups, to Hamas. I mean, this guy was hanging with some pretty bad company. Now, tell me what you know about that, and what does that all mean to his eventual murder?
I mean, the guy was not a saint. The only reason he's a saint now is because the news media in America is using him to hammer Donald Trump. That's the only reason. Look, 4,000 people coming from Guatemala or whatever, Honduras, to invade America should have been number one item on the news. But the death of one Muslim, all of a sudden, it becomes the most important thing in the world. 500,000 Syrians have been murdered by Muslims, and nobody says anything. Hundreds of thousands of Christians, in fact, over a million of them now, had to be removed. They were literally removed from Iraq, my country. And nobody says anything. Why all of a sudden Khashoggi? Only because of Donald Trump. Now, let me tell you this. Donald Trump does not have to do anything against Saudi Arabia. They killed one of their own people. True, barbaric. But everything in Islam is barbaric. What does ISIS do? Barbarism. What does Boko Haram do? Barbarism. The same thing with Hamas and Hezbollah. So why all of a sudden the death of one man? It is a cover. They want to humiliate Donald Trump. That's all. Khashoggi was not innocent. He went to the Saudi consulate or embassy or whatever it was, knowing that he was under threat. He went. He paid for it with his life. True, they barbarically killed him. But that's nothing special in Saudi Arabia. That's nothing special in Islam.
What I understand thus far, the reports on this are this. Supposedly, they took him and initially cut his fingers off of him. So they tortured him, in other words, so he would feel the pain. And know evidently what he did to, again, the the Saudi royalty, the family, Salman specifically. And so they tortured him by cutting his limbs off, and then they cut his head off. Now, by any standard, IQ, if that happened in the West anywhere, there would be, like, I mean, the cries and the shouts would be from here to the mountaintops. You would hear, like, it would be the most egregious thing ever that happened. But yet, these people do this on a daily, regular basis. In fact, I said on radio the other day, they do this before breakfast in the morning. They think nothing of it. Here's what I want to ask you, specifically, for people that are listening. Explain to us, if you can, and just plain talk here. They can, I mean, this doesn't faze them at all. They have no problem with torture, and they have no problem with brutally murder. They have no problem with being barbaric. They have no problem with any of this. How is it, my friend, that certain people can do this and their conscience is totally clean versus anybody else that has, you know, from our walk of life, it would be like, it would be the most inhumane thing you could ever imagine in your life. Explain, take a minute and explain to us, so listeners get it, what the difference is in those two cultures, please.
It's really simple. They are emulating Muhammad. Who is Muhammad? According to Islam, Muhammad is the most perfect human being that was ever created, superior to Jesus, to Moses, and to Abraham. Muslims have to emulate Muhammad. The Quran mandates it. The perfect man. Well, this perfect man, what did he do in his life? What was Muhammad? A pathological liar, a mass murderer, a predator upon women, and a child molester and rapist. That's the history of Islam. Why is everybody shocked? I can't believe it. 1400 years, you have the history of 1400 years of Islam. They massacred and exterminated 110 million Hindus, 140 million Africans. 70 million Christians and other peoples were either massacred or enslaved. Why all of a sudden everybody is shocked? There's nothing shocking about Islam. Islam is opposite of anything the human beings have ever aspired for. This is why you have 57 Muslim majority states.
I'm like you in many ways. The hypocrisy is more than I can stand, buddy. I cannot stomach it. And that's, I know that's how you are as well. We don't like that double, triple standard that goes on out there with these power seekers. And like you say, how they can use one murder as some sort of a big development, like this is some big earth-shattering thing that's never happened before. Like I said, it happens every day before breakfast. I mean, it is not a big deal to these people. It's how they act. It's who they are. Let me ask you this. The Saudi prince now, Prince Mohammed bin Salman here, the MBS, do you have any doubt in your mind? Let's explain to people now, because you know the background, you know the family, you know what this is all about. Was he involved in the decision to murder Khashoggi, yes or no?
You need 16 people to go to the embassy to kill one man. Why? I mean, where's the logic, for God's sake? Why do you need 16 people? I mean, to murder a single human being, you need another human being. Maybe he was involved. Maybe he isn't involved. Maybe it was done to spite him. We don't know. These things, we don't know. But what's happening is, you have the New York Times, you have the leftists in the government in the United States of America, all the news, fake media. They are literally doing it to hurt Trump and nothing else.
Yeah.
Look, America has a deal, $110 billion worth armaments with Saudi Arabia. Why should anybody jeopardize it? Why is all of a sudden Saudi Arabia picked? Why not Pakistan? Why not Afghanistan? Why not Iraq? Why not the Palestinians? Why all of a sudden Saudi Arabia? But Saudi Arabia has been with America for the last, since 1923. They've been allies. I'm not saying they love each other. It's a use. Each other uses each other. There's no question about it. That becomes independent, literally, completely and utterly independent with oil and gas. The game is over.
Well, it's getting close to that now, buddy. It's getting pretty close to that. Energy independence here, you're right. The Middle East has been a token. Although, I don't really know if that's going to be the case, though, IQ, because you've got Israel there. Don't forget, the Middle East will always be important because of Israel, don't you think?
Yes, but Israel is not the problem. Islam is the problem. When did a single American die defending Israel? Please tell me.
Yeah,
10,000 Americans died defending Muslims and Arabs.
So you're saying Israel can handle itself is what you're telling me.
100% guaranteed. They need help from America.
It's amazing.
They need armaments from America.
Yeah.
No question. about that. Okay.
You know, IQ, I've been thinking a lot in the past days and weeks about how ironic it is that Israel, God's chosen people, how it's really right in the center of hell.
It is. That's exactly what happened all the time.
I know.
If you look at the history of Israel, they were always in the center of hell.
It's amazing to me. I don't think this is a cruel joke. I think this is very intentional by the standards of what God intended. You know what I mean?
Correct. That's why they are... Look, the Jews should never have survived.
That's right.
There should have been no Jews left on earth. Mm-hmm. But all the people who wanted the Jews dead are dead. Mm-hmm. The Roman Empire, the Greek Empire... All of them are gone. Mm. Even the Arabs. What are they? What do they produce?
Yeah.
Nothing. Zero. Israel, 8 million people, 6 million Jews, 2 million Arabs, in 8,000 square miles, outproduces the whole of Ummat Muhammad, mm-hmm. the Muslims, of 1.5 billion, 100 to 1.
I mean, you think about that, you're right. How is that possible, IQ? You know, when you think about that, IQ, and we put it in the terms that we just put it in, and then if somebody ever says to me or doubts, is there a God? I almost want to say, this is proof number one, evidence number one. Let's just open this conversation and talk about exactly what you and I are talking about right now. And if you are to question out there, is there a God? And what is the intent of this? Just look at what we are talking about right at this moment, people, when it comes to Israel and their basic existence.
Existence of Israel is against all odds, I swear. Look, today Israel... is only second to America mm-hmm. in creating new inventions. Second only to America, not even to Europe.
Wow.
Only to America.
Yeah.
8,000 square miles with 6 million Jews. Mm-hmm. Second only to America of 338 million.
Yeah. IQ, there are a lot of politicians right now calling for MBS to step down. They want the prince out of there, like we can control that, like it's our country or something, you know. But they're actually demanding that. Tell me what you think happens from this. Does Prince Salman, does he make it through this? Does he stay in power?
Good God, of course he will. Why shouldn't he? Right. Who are these people who are telling prince or the king of an independent state step down? Who? What, the news media? Why aren't the news media telling Angela Merkel to step down? After all, she brought in 1.5 million Muslims to destroy Germany. What are we discussing here? We're discussing... You see, Donald Trump called them fake media. Mm-hmm. He was very kind to them. And for 10 years, I have always said that besides Islam, the greatest threat to human civilization in the West, whether America or Europe, are the news media.
Yeah. Well, it's called selective outrage. That's what we call it, IQ, you know, right? Selective outrage. It's all about power, greed, and what they're looking for. And I think the more that my goal here, people, is for you to really understand these bouncing balls and where they go. And IQ, you explain it so well, all of it. And I was really looking forward to having this conversation with you because I thought you would. First of all, I was curious. We hadn't talked about it before just now, but I was very curious to get your perspective on it. Who somebody understands this culture better than anybody that I know and speaks and writes about it on a daily basis. It was good to get your perspective here. There's a lot more to talk about on this. We'll follow up and have IQ back to continue more of this dialogue. And let's see what happens with Jamal Khashoggi, friends. Let's see what takes place here and what the ultimate decision is, because there's a lot at stake here again. A lot at stake. Again, Saudi Arabia is the key to dealing with Iran. It's the key to dealing with a lot of the evil out there. And, you know, it is what it is. It is a culture unto its own, people. And we can't control that, can we now? Yeah, think about it, right? A big thank you here to IQ Al-Razouli. Friends, again, you'll read most of his columns and his write-ins right at America Out Loud every Monday. Just go to the nav bar to bloggers and look at IQ, and you go to his expert page, and I'm telling you, you'll get more information and knowledge on this topic than you could ever imagine. You'll get it right here. And every Monday, you'll hear his thoughts, and we enjoy having him on here as well.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. There's a lot to talk about in this segment. Let's get started here, friends, and welcome on Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality, and producer here at America Out Loud. Ava is an author who writes about, well, military, law enforcement, patriotism, all the cool stuff, and 15 books to her credit, and it's good to have Ava on with us today. Kevin Williams joins us. Good to have Kevin back. He was on one of the times some months ago, and I convinced him to come back again, huh, Kevin? Kevin has worked in corporate finance for 25 plus years with names like IBM and Toshiba. I would call him a social media influencer. And I use that term in a good way because Ava is as well. They're both social media influencers because they use it as a real tool to really propagate opinions and thoughts, to engage with people. And so perfect for this discussion here, friends. The first thing that came to my mind is that I think the public is losing confidence. I mean, you can call it whatever you want, and you can look, below the radar and see what's really happening. But I think when you look at a lot of the things that have happened, like we hear the terms, Ava, like Shadow Bannon, we hear the terms mm-hmm. that are used quite a bit. We hear the terms, I know a lot of people who've left social media. I mean, they're so fed up and tired. I mean, really, really done with these companies like Facebook and Twitter. And these two are probably two of the worst, although it seems like all the social media outlets are, cahoots with each other, I guess, Ava, more or less. It's kind of weird how they all come from one political belief. I don't know. Of course, you're starting to see a lot of these new ones come around too, Ava, things like Codius and Gab and a lot of ones you're on. So what's behind all this, you think?
Well, I think the mainstream media is very late with catching on here. We've already left the building, okay? The American public has moved on. We've moved away from the television news, the fake news. And it's really quite dangerous news sometimes. Some of the things they're saying about Trump are totally untrue. And it's all conjecture and just really, really down in the gutter. And I think people have just gotten so turned off from that. I would say to you that these giant mega social media places are going to also go down in flames if they do not stop censoring conservatives. So
do you see any sign that they're going to stop doing that? Because I'm not hearing anything that's positive about it.
Okay, I'll make a prediction right now.
Okay.
And I don't have any inside information, but I'm watching things as they mm-hmm. they develop. Mm-hmm. I think Twitter will, the head of Twitter, the guy that's the CEO, I believe his name is Jack Dorsey.
Dorsey.
And I think he will be stepping down soon. And I think Twitter as a platform will be greatly changed. I have a feeling there are
really
big, big changes coming. I think they're terrified to go the way of Facebook and MySpace and everything else.
Wow. Ava, I didn't tell you that I got a job offer this past week from Twitter to be the CEO of that company, by the way. I didn't tell you that, did I?
Can I get a job?
Yeah, exactly, Kevin. We're going to run that thing, man. Better than Dorsey has, I'll tell you that.
I guess we could change the algorithm a little bit.
Yeah, we would, for sure.
The bad people like me go from conservatives to liberals.
Yeah, yeah.
Make a little dial change.
Kevin, what are you experiencing yourself? Now, you are a master at this thing. I mean, you really have mastered it. In addition to your full-time job, you've been able to master this thing incredibly. So, but what are you finding?
Well, it's pretty, even though Twitter says they're not shadow banning us, right? They use that term and that was their response. But what they consider shadow banning is that nobody can see your tweets but you. So they've focused it down to that's what they call shadow banning. For myself, I call shadow banning where the Twitter restricts my tweets only to my followers and no one else can see them. Right, so there's 330 million users.
So they're not in the public space. In other words, they're not seeing them in the public
space. Right, exactly. So when I see shadow banning, it's like limiting them to just the people that follow me. Nobody else can see it. And it's obvious when somebody is shadow banned. At least it's obvious to me when they're shadow banning me because I can see a complete change in the impressions that I'm getting, the number of new followers that are coming in. I see, you know, the retweets or the likes, they all go way down. It's like they can turn on the switch and turn it off. And it's not just like only me. It's like a massive amount of you know, conservatives. And so they call us like, what, bad actors, right? And, we're bad just because we, one, we're working together. We're saying they call us like we're the bigots or we're the racist or no matter what. It's like certain words they don't like. Somebody gets banned just because they might have used the word Islam in a negative way. Instead of when I use it, I always will say radical Islam to try to isolate it to something specific. And I mean, there are so many good people. Like there's a gal who has been on the Trump campaign, did thousands and thousands of calls. She went to Missouri, temporarily moved to help another Republican try to win against McCaskill. And she was just lost to her account of 80,000 people yesterday.
Wow.
And it was just some simple word or something that she used. And it happens all the time now, and it's getting worse.
Kevin, when you say lost it, what does that mean?
It's completely suspended. It's gone. Like, she cannot.
You mean they do a complete suspension? They do a
yes.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, and hold on now. Hold on. What are the rules of engagement for that complete suspension, Kevin? Why?
They just send you an email, like a note that says you have violated the rules. And contact us if you think you'd like to appeal it. Unfortunately, a lot of people, the appeal doesn't work. So
you can't contact them. You never can talk to anybody. It's all a bunch of robbers. Because I tried that with Facebook years ago. They threw me off. Facebook has twice they did, Kevin. And
you can't call them.
Call them. I tried to reach Zuckerberg at his vacation home. The son of a bitch wouldn't answer.
Did you tell him it was Malcolm out loud?
I mean, did. And they hung it up faster, man. They hung it up. Done.
Well, at least they'd know who you were.
Exactly. Oh, they knew who I was, buddy. Believe me.
But they'd say, Kevin W., who's that? I mean, but Malcolm.
Well, they hung up quick, let me tell you. But they knew who I was. But, you know, but what I really have trouble understanding, I mean, if you're going to do a social media company, an outlet, and wouldn't you want to engage in all opinions and all thoughts?
Well, they've really fallen in love with themselves, thinking that they can control the narrative. They cannot control the narrative because Trump won the election. And that this has exploded everything, okay? It's blown everything up. All of their little empires that they've created, their little, leftist empires, they're all blowing apart now. You're going to see many, many media organizations fail. They're going to just financially crumble. Lots of print media has already done that. Social media is starting to get the virus. They have to really come up and understand what they're doing to us as people. I mean, we're not going to just take this stuff. I mean, there's got to be at least 70 million people probably in this country who are very, very positive about President Trump. And they probably don't know right now that the national debt has gone down $102 billion since he's been in office. You won't hear things like that.
I should have reminded Harry of that, Ava. That's right.
You will hear that, though. You will hear that from me on Twitter. You'll hear that from me on America Out Loud, okay?
Right.
You will hear the things that are the truth. And Kevin is the same way. He's tweeting out the truth as well.
I'm trying.
You're trying, yeah. Kevin, talk to me a minute about when you say you're trying. I want to understand something. I want to talk just a quick moment before I get into the election and the hacking. I want to talk about civil discourse a moment here. I'm very curious. As you engage with a lot of people in social media, and I'm wondering, what's your sense right now, for real, of civil discourse? And how are people, like, I mean, I'm just wondering, what percentage of hate mongers are there? What sort of feedback do you get? How do you relate to those people? Do you have to block a lot of people? How nasty do they get? How do you have to react? What's going on?
You know, I think when I first started on Twitter, I probably did a lot more interaction with individuals. And at the time, I always felt myself, this is just me, if they were, you know, attack me back, I'd try to be as nice as I could. And if the discussion just got out of hand, I always ended with, you know, we can agree to disagree. And I always try, this is just me, to end on a positive, like have a good day or have a good weekend or right. because I find that, you know, just continually attacking each other back and forth, it's not going to solve anything. Mm-hmm. So that's what I try to do. I mean, others, I mean, most of the time they want to start some sort of discussion back and forth, an argument. And then what happens is the conservative who says something like what might sound racist, they immediately get reported by the liberal and they get suspended.
So they're reporting them to the social media companies is what they're doing.
There's a button that says, please report. So you can report to Twitter who has said something racist, who is posting something that's, say, inappropriate.
Right.
And I know for conservatives, as soon as they say something, one little thing bad, it's like an immediate 7-day suspension. People are getting suspended 7 days right away, and some, like I said, are losing their account.
I do not engage with people who do not, you know, they're just trying to drag you down this road. So don't go.
So you don't go back and forth with folks.
No, honey, this is hand-to-hand combat on Twitter. You've got to understand. I put a tweet out on a regular basis, okay? Mm-hmm. I am on Twitter for two reasons. I'm an author on Amazon. I'm selling books.
Right, amen.
And the second reason is I support Donald Trump, and I'll do anything to help get him reelected.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo, that's it. Okay, done.
And that's your agenda. There it is. Well, that's honest.
My agenda.
Well, that's it. I try not to engage with people because you're right. Once you engage back, you say something wrong, it might not even be that offensive.
Right.
Right.
To them, and then to what they call healthy conversation now, they suspend you immediately.
Well, but I got to bring up one thing, though, Malcolm. Okay. America Out Loud has been surging. Your company has been surging. The network has done great. Rush Limbaugh's audience has grown beyond 30 million people. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a second. I mean, when you start realizing we the people, the conservatives, are making this happen, okay?
Right.
And if not for WikiLeaks, Judicial Watch, America Out Loud, the Freedom Caucus, Twitter,
Amen.
Sean Hannity and Mark Levin, I'm telling you right now, we would not know the things we know right now.
Right.
So these are the people I am very, very sincerely interested in following and listening to.
Right.
You know, it's like we've been, you know, asking for help on this Twitter shadow banning for quite a while. And nothing has happened. And for the first time, because these high-profile Republicans like Mark Meadows and Devin Nunes and all those are finally seeing it, it seems like there's some focus on it.
Yeah.
And the question I have is, do you think anything's really going to happen?
Yes, I do.
What a really good conversation here, friends. You know, I really am very open-minded to this whole conversation of what is free speech. I think we are losing it in this nation, and it's sad. But again, I put the question out there, what's happened with all the media, all these multimedia outlets, both social media and news media? Why, you know, they get into a business model. And again, folks, they are a private business. They can do what they want to do. And like Kevin was just saying a moment, if they want to suspend you, they can suspend you. It is a privately held business. In other words, it's not built into our constitution. We don't have a right to have to do business with them. But there is this thing called free speech. And you'd think if everybody was going to play the game properly, then they would engage in all people being. But, you know, again, on the flip side, people, what happened to simple respect and civil discourse? And you hear the conversations from Kevin and Ava, and you can just see they understand what that is, what civil discourse is and what respect is. And I think that's what most people want. I think most of you listening, that's what you engage with as well. What's wrong with being a lady and a gentleman and still having a difference of opinion? There's nothing wrong with that, people. It's what this nation is built on. Get over it. Let's move on, people, huh? Big thank you here to Ava Armstrong, Kevin Williams. What a great show, friends, on Viewpoint. And again, we keep bringing it to you. A lot to read back on the platform, AmericaOutloud.com. All the shows of the air catches on America Out Loud Talk Radio worldwide. And of course, all of our shows and content goes to podcast as well, which is a new way to listen on demand.